Afternoon here on 5 Live. Phil Williams in for Simon. He's back on Monday. Simon Mayo returns to this seat 1 o'clock on Monday. And returning this week with films you've already heard from him is Mark Kermode. How are you, sir?
Very good. And of course, you know, the size 13 docks are serving me perfectly fine, although I'm not walking uphill.
No, but at least also the one thing you're not doing with them is putting them in your mouth as well, which is always a trick on the radio, I find. So this week's movies are Crash, Football Days, Spirit Trap, The Island, The Perfect Catch, The Rising, and The Secret Lives of Dentists.
Yes.
Let's do the UK box office top 10 first off, then. At 10, The Descent.
See, I really like The Descent. I think it's a very smart, intelligent horror film that starts out very claustrophobic and then after the first half just turns into a whole bunch of other horror movies all jammed together. Although I was rather alarmed that I was in a cinema the other day and I saw a trailer for an American movie called The Cave, which seems to be exactly the same movie, but with just loads and loads of dollars thrown at it.
And fewer syllables.
Yeah, exactly. And I haven't seen The Cave yet, so it may be that I'll stand corrected when actually the movie, but from the trailer, it looks like the same film. If you haven't seen The Descent yet, go and see it. It's a really good, no-nonsense, homegrown, white-knuckle British chiller, and I think it's well worth seeing.
At 9, The Devil's Rejects. Before you give your verdict, yeah, I just have to read this out from Big Al.
Okay.
Who put, Mr. Kermode, is Devil's Rejects any good?
No, it's rubbish. And in fact, I want to take issue with this. I know a lot of horror fans are saying, Devil's Rejects is really good because it's really nasty. It's a grungy horror film. Here's the thing, okay? I like grungy, nasty horror films. I always have done. However, I have absolutely no tolerance for adolescent Manson apologists. And the fact of the matter is that after making a not very good debut, Rob Zombie, the director, anyone who calls himself Rob Zombie needs to be taken out and spoken to in harsh terms anyway. But having made a not great debut with House of a Thousand Corpses, he now comes up with this, you know, story of these people who are essentially Mansonites roaring around the desert, being unpleasant, being nasty to each other. And he thinks that somehow, during the course of all the unpleasantness, that we will find these characters interesting, like rebels and outlaws, and we will end up siding with them, which is why he ends up with a 7-minute section which plays out over the whole of Freebird that's essentially Bonnie and Clyde. But let me get this absolutely straight. And if Rob Zombie or any of you lot are listening, let me get this absolutely clear. Anyone who thinks that Manson was an interesting character as opposed to just a cheap, scuzzy, verminous git who deserves to rot behind bars for the rest of his life is an idiot. And I'm sorry, that's it. These people aren't interesting. I mean, they're not, you know, I know these characters, they're fictional, but you don't call a character Charlie Altamont and expect to walk around. I'm sorry, it's just adolescent, infantile twaddle, and it gives horror films a bad name. And Rob Zombie, you need to grow up.
For me and you, this is
a
radio.
Was that clear enough?
For me and you, this is a radio program. For Mark, it's nothing more than a bus stop.
I just wanted to make this absolutely clear, because I wasn't here when they previously, so I paid £9 to see The Devil's Disciples, and I just thought, and I know as I'm watching it that there are, you know, gore hounds, and I love gore hounds. I wrote for Fangoria for 6 years. There are gore hounds out there thinking this movie must be, you know, radical and rebellious because it's all about people being really nice. No, it's not. It's a film made by exactly those same nitwits who wear Charles Manson t-shirts and think that there's something really rebellious about that. He was a Nazi. How rebellious is that? Is a Nazi. Not was, is a Nazi.
You all right?
No, it makes me really cross, but moving on.
Can we get him a brew? Someone talking about a brew or something?
I am well caffeinated enough, thank you.
All right, back in your box, sweetheart.
Thank you.
At 8, The Skeleton Key.
And James should know better, incidentally. Skeleton Key, I like it. It's a moody, interesting chiller by Ian Softley. It's better directed than it is written. I mean, the script is by Aaron Kruger. And Aaron Kruger, you know, famously adapted Ringu as The Ring in Britain. I don't think Aaron Kruger is the greatest scriptwriter in the world, but I do think Ian Softley is a very good director. And I think there's much stuff in here that's interesting. Great performance by Gina Rowlands. Very atmospheric, good sense of location. Worth seeing.
Must admit, as regards Manson, I quite like garbage. At 7, Shirley, you see.
Yes, I know.
At 7, Stealth.
Even I know that. We're talking about Trent Reznor soon. See, even I was at Radio 1 when that stuff was happening. Stealth, boring, you know, not very interesting. Wants to be more interesting than it is. Thriller. You know, the W.D. Richter involvement is about the most interesting thing.
At 6, War of the Worlds.
I like War of the Worlds, and it's funny. It is a big, stupid popcorn movie, which is actually nothing like as stupid as it looks. I mean, Spielberg effectively invented the blockbuster 30 years ago with Jaws. With this, he's making another summer blockbuster. This is his last chance to see it, because obviously by the time we get to the autumn, it's, you know, it's all a bit old hat. But what I liked about it is it's amazing to see Spielberg and Tom Cruise, who are incredible mainstream puppies, making a film as nihilistic as War of the Worlds is. I mean, yes, it ends with a group hug, and incidentally, I'm not giving anything away. Everyone knows how War of the Worlds ends, but But I think it's Spielberg's best film in a long time.
Why was it shrouded in such secrecy? Why couldn't
there... Well, that was there was a big weird controversy about that, because they didn't show anyone the film until very close to opening date. And the short version of it is that basically, with a film that big, what the studios are now deciding is that critics are just an irritation. If we praise a movie, it has very little impact on the box office. If we damn a movie, it has very little impact on the box office. But they're really scared that if we damn a movie, it'll lose them millions. And believe me, I think if you look over the history of movies that have made millions, that critics have stomped all over, you know that that's just a load of rubbish. So
give us one big box office film that everyone stomped on that still went on.
Well, I mean, absolutely everyone stomped on things like Porky's and all those kind of American teen comedy movies like American. No critic. I mean, Dude, Where's My Car made money. Okay, go figure. Actually, an even better example: Waterworld made money. Waterworld was not the great loss that everyone... Pearl Harbor, the Michael Bay movie, has taken $450 million worldwide in theatres and has become one of the biggest-selling DVDs of all time, despite the fact that...
It's Bobbins.
You'd be hard-pressed to find a critic who would say a nice word about it.
At five, Herbie Fully Loaded.
I don't know, because I've been off, but I'm going to go and see it with my kids this weekend. I have to say, I'm really looking forward to it. I like the trailer, and so I don't, I'll give you a verdict next week, but I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, I'm sure it'll be what it is. It's a kids' movie, with Lindsay Lohan in it, so, hey.
At four, Fantastic Four.
I didn't like it, and it's a funny thing because, there's been so many great comic book adaptations recently, most obviously Batman Begins, which is dark and grim and interesting and gothic, and the Spider-Man movies, which Sam Raimi directed. Sam Raimi, of course, made his name making the Evil Dead movies, which briefly were banned here in this country under the Obscene Publications Act. And along comes Fantastic Four, which is big and breezy and colourful and stupid and cheesy, and apparently aimed at the younger viewers. Okay, if it's aimed at younger viewers, explain this to me. Why is it that the Invisible Woman, there's four superheroes, right?
Yeah, I've seen this.
Three of them male, one of them a woman. Why is it that the male characters are able to look like, Mount Rushmore and be heroic, but the female character has to look like a stripper and has to make loads and loads of gags about walking around in her underwear? It's like, I'm sorry, if you want to make a movie for kids, give the girls a decent role model. I mean, I was really annoyed by it. It was kind of like, it's like saying to guys, hey, you can be heroic, but girls, you all need to look like Jessica Alba. I thought that was puerile.
You're on a different level to me, because I just thought it was boring.
Yeah, well, it is boring, but boring with an edge of offensive. As opposed to The Devil's Reject, which is really boring and really offensive.
I thought that was a review of me for sensing boring but offensive. three, The Wedding Crashers.
It is what it is. Except it isn't. I mean, that's the worst thing about it. It starts off as a movie about bozo guys crashing weddings and behaving in an adolescent fashion, and then about 30 minutes in, it loses the strength of its convictions, and it decides that they ought to grow up, which is a real problem. Actually, I'm happy to watch a 90-minute bozo comedy, but I don't want the growing up.
If you want to know the top two films of the UK box office this week, you're going to have to wait until after the news at 3:30. VJ's been on, and he said, it's fantastic to hear Mark Kermode back. The king is dead. Long live the king.
Oh, as in
James,
my boy.
Yeah, he's your boy. He's your prodigy. We're halfway through the UK box office top 10. At 10, The Descent; 9, Devil Rejects; 8, Skeleton Key; 7, Stealth; 6, War of the Worlds; 5, Herbie Fully Loaded. He's not seen it. He's taking the kids. 4, Fantastic Four; 3, Wedding Crashers; 2, Madagascar.
Yeah, it's fine. Perfectly fine.
It's great.
My kids are now going around, I like to move it. They're doing that song that, that Sacha Baron
Cohen, who it was?
Ali G.
Can you remember the real artist for 5 bonus points?
No, I can't.
Reel to Reel featuring the Mad Stuntman.
Really?
But you only get the full points if you remember the Mad Stuntman.
Okay, but what's really terrible is how pleased you look with yourself for remembering that.
Because, right, what I'd like to know is, have you ever met a stuntman who isn't mad?
No.
They are then.
Okay.
Pointless name.
Moving on.
One, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Loved it. Thought it was great. It's a Tim Burton movie. It's fantastic. Want to go and see it again. Really, really liked it. Really pleased. Like the original version. Like this more.
Went to see The Dukes of Hazzard last night.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Right?
Yeah, and?
Well, were you a fan of the TV show?
No.
Okay, well...
Well, because A, it's a TV show, and B, no.
Right.
But
well,
moving on.
I was, right? Yeah. And I think if you were a fan of the TV show... And you go and see the film, you'll be disappointed with Sheriff Roscoe P. Coltrane. Mm-hmm. However, Sean William Scott is brilliant as Bo. The other guy from Jackass, Johnny Knoxville, less good.
They got the,
but it's all right. It's
Robert E. Lee's still got the Confederate flag on the roof.
Yes. Oh. Yeah, which gets him into a lot of trouble. There's some comedy in the film about that. Let's go to... Thank you very much indeed. 3:48, Phil Williams here with Mark Kermode. And Chris in Torpoint has been on in Cornwall, says, I really enjoyed Mark's review of Devil's Rejects. Can't wait for Pirates of the Caribbean 2 next year.
is that what they're making? Oh, great. Terrific.
Richard said, so if what the film critics say makes no impact, why do we bother with them?
Well, because it's interesting. Well, for two reasons. Firstly, because films are, of course, the most important thing in the world. And secondly, because you don't have to bother with them. I mean, you know, there's an awful lot of critics out there who think that The Exorcist isn't the greatest movie ever made and don't like Citizen Kane. So, hey, you know, you pay your money, you take your choice.
I thought for a minute you talked yourself out of a job. Charlie in the Chocolate Factory looks good. Absolutely rubbish. The original Wonka was class. Why bother to remake? Me and the kids disagree with you. That's Simon from Umpa Lumpa Land.
No, well, I went with my kids, and you know, and I really liked it, and the kids really liked it, and I thought there was an awful lot going on in it, and I thought it was, again, it was very interesting that Tim Burton manages to get as much edginess as he does. I mean, it's funny, because the original is darker than people remember. The Umpa Lumpas in the original are weird and threatening and strange, and there is a lot of worry about what's happening to the kids after they get, you know, sucked up the candy pipes and everything. But I just thought, I really liked it. I think it's a great story. I'm a big Roald Dahl fan. And I watched The Witches again recently, which, of course, got terribly messed up because they forced him to change the ending. There's a Nick Rogue adaptation of the Roald Dahl film. But I do like the new Charlie.
The reason why I started telling you about Dukes of Hazzard was because beforehand they showed us a trailer for Corpse Bride, which is the new Tim Burton. It does look stunning.
Yeah, I've seen the posters, but I haven't seen the trailer. So anyway, moving swiftly on, because there are some films out.
There's some films out this week, and there's so many. I don't know how many you're going to get to rattle through. Why don't you start with The Island?
Okay, fine. So, The Island, new Michael Bay movie. Here, everyone knows the deal with Michael Bay. Michael Bay has had 5 consecutive number ones, starting with Bad Boys and then, you know, Armageddon and The Rock and Pearl Harbor, of course. Now, the thing with Pearl Harbor was everybody thought Pearl Harbor was absolutely terrible. If you've seen Team America World Police, there's a famous song in it in which the puppets sing I Miss You More Than Michael Bay Missed the Mark with Pearl Harbor. And it is a generally received thing that Pearl Harbor was a total stinker of gargantuan proportions. However, it took money. It went number one in the American box office, and as I said before, it took $450 million. Now, this is Michael Bay's first movie made without the guiding hand of producer Jerry Bruckheimer, who's a real hit maker. And it's a very expensive, like $130 million is the reported price, science fiction film, which stars Ewan McGregor and Scarlett Johansson. Not Johansson, incidentally, Johansson. We have to be correct about this. Scarlett Johansson.
Did she tell you that?
No, it's a known fact. That's how her name is pronounced. Everyone calls her Johansson, but it's Johansson.
How do you know that?
Because I know, because it's correct, and I'm right. You're going to have a row about it?
No, I can't dispute it.
I just want to be clear about
this. I just think the burden of proof lies with you.
No, the burden of proof is that I'm right, okay? Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett, if you're listening, ring up. And I think that's probably... Although she's here filming a Woody Allen film, isn't she? It's entirely possible.
She's a huge fan of yours.
Okay, fine. So, anyway, the story is Ewan McGregor, Scarlett Johansson together in this... kind of a hermetically sealed futuristic world in which they have been told that the world outside has been totally destroyed and everyone is now living in this lovely hermetically sealed world, and there is a lottery going on, and every week somebody wins the lottery and they go off to the island. However, as we know from the outset, and as you probably know from the publicity anyway, the whole thing is a big conspiracy. These people are in fact perfectly created genetic clones whose existence is a sinister plot which will unravel when Ewan McGregor manages to break out of the hermetically sealed environment. Now, this is fine. Anyone who has any memory of trashy sci-fi movies will recognise this straight away as a remake of The Clonus Horror, which is a Robert Fiveson movie from 1979, which cost around $350,000 to make, and in fact was nominated for a Saturn Award for one of the best films that year made for under $1 million. The problem is that The Island is not a remake of it. It has exactly the same plot. It has many of the same set pieces. It has all the same philosophical debates. What does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be not human? If you're cloned, do you have a soul? Can people, you know, anyone who's seen Coma will recognize riffs from Coma. Anyone who's seen Logan's Run will recognize the design from Logan's Run. But the most staggering ripoff is clearly Robert Fiveson's The Clonus Horror. And as from reports last week, Robert Fiveson is currently contemplating legal action because it is clearly a remake of The Clonus Horror. That said, it's more significant in being Michael Bay's first tank movie. It's just died. At the American box office, last I looked, it had taken just getting towards $30 million, maybe $31 million. This is a movie that cost $130 million in America, and that is that's a catastrophe. It's a bad opening. It's the first of his movies that hasn't gone to number one, and everyone's jumping up and down saying, hooray, justice has been done to Michael Bay, which is odd, because it's not his worst movie by any means. Now, you've seen it, haven't you?
I've seen it, and I really liked it.
Okay, well, I didn't really like it. I think there are things that are interesting in the opening. I think there are Ewan McGregor's performance, which incidentally is coming for a lot of flack. Apparently he had a bit of a hissy fit at a premiere recently when somebody criticised his accent. They said, you know, are you going to drop the American accent? Because frankly, you can't do it, can you? And apparently he was not best pleased about that, which I rightly so, because his American accent is perfectly fine. He and Scarlett Johansson are perfectly interesting, attractive leads. It's a very well-worn old sci-fi chestnut that, unfortunately, if it had a proper producer, would have been cut down to 90 minutes long. It is, as it is, 2 hours and 10 minutes long, at least an hour of which is car chases, explosions, and Michael Bay retina-scorching, incredibly loud banging noises, which I found rather tedious. But it's not the worst movie he's ever made. I mean, it's not Pearl Harbor. Mm. It's not in the same sort of, you know, awful missing the mark league. It's not great, but you thought you, I mean, you liked it more than me, right?
I liked it. I thought it was fine. It was a great action film. I spotted the twist coming, but I didn't get the end twist, which is fine. I quite like that about films. My biggest problem, well, and what really left a sour taste in the mouth, yes, was the huge amount of product placement that's blatantly in the film.
Enormous. Just enormous product placement. But that is, unfortunately, a great big thing about, you know, American blockbuster movies now, is product placement is all over the place. And if you remember, I think it was Back to the Future 2 which really started this trend, because Back to the Future 2 was just everywhere you look, there was product placement. It's interesting, however, that I would say that The Island bears closer resemblance to the Clonus horror than The Perfect Catch does to Fever Pitch, which is Nick Hornby's novel on which it is allegedly based. And just to say this quickly, because I want to talk about Crash, The Perfect Catch is a perfectly innocuous romantic comedy with Drew Barrymore as an executive businesswoman who meets up with a guy who's sport obsessed, and he can't lose his sport obsession to make his relationship with Drew Barrymore work. Now, that's the bare bones of the plot of Fever Pitch, except it's a movie set in America. It's not about football, which of course the Nick Hornby was. It's about baseball. The characters don't do any of the great lines that they do in the Nick Hornby. And if you ever saw the 90s British adaptation of Fever Pitch, starring Colin Firth.
Yeah,
I like that film.
And very innocent.
Critically not well received, but the Farrelly Brothers movie is fine, but it's a real stretch to say that it's based on the Nick Hornby. And I really think that it's, you know, The Island is closer to the Clonus horror than The Perfect Catch is to Nick Hornby's Fever Pitch.
So The Island is worth a look. Perfect Catch, is it worth a look?
It's, you know, it's a very,
Is it a DVD one?
You know, if you want a totally innocuous date movie, or if you like Drew Barrymore, I actually rather like Drew Barrymore. I think she's quite funny.
Yeah.
But it's not worth shelling out. I mean, I'm a big fan of the Farrelly Brothers as well, and it's certainly their limpest movie, but it's not terrible.
Hello to Andy in the West Midlands, who said, Phil, the mad stuntman had 1.5 trouser legs, and I'm feeling rather proud that I remembered that as well.
Very good.
Now, Cyan Wigan, the last film I watched called Crash was bigged up by young Mark,
yes,
and turned out to be a sick voyage of masochism. Tell me that this one is better.
I see. I loved Crash. David Cronenberg's Crash. Now, this is the new movie called Crash by Paul Haggis. Paul Haggis wrote the script for Million Dollar Baby, the Clint Eastwood movie, which was wrongly berated in America by some born-again nutballs who said, oh, it's a pro-euthanasia movie, which it clearly wasn't. It was actually a very interesting movie about spirituality and life and death. Anyway, Crash, in this new version by Paul Haggis, is about a series of interlocking stories in Los Angeles in which people of different race, creed and colour collide into each other. It begins and ends with a car crash. There are several crashes in between. And there's an opening speech by Don Cheadle, who is one of the people who helped get this thing off the ground, in which Don Cheadle's character, who is a cop, says, you know, the terrible thing is in Los Angeles you never touch anyone. You're always behind metal and glass. And I think the reason that cars prang each other is because we need that physical touch. And the whole of the rest of the film is about the way in which people crisscross, people's lives crisscross. I'm going to play you a very quick clip. This is Sandra Bullock as an uptight, middle-class white woman who has been carjacked earlier on in the evening by two black guys. And what this speech, I think, sets up is what the film tries to do is to speak the unspeakable. Every character says all those things that people don't say in movies anymore, but they're all shown to be as confused and as wrong as each other. Now, basically, that kind of sets up the premise of the film, is that, you know, she's white, she sees somebody who's Hispanic, she immediately imagines he's a gangbanger, she sees these black youths on the street, she's terrified of them, but of course they are worried about her because she's a white, rich, powerful woman and they are disempowered, and somebody gets referred to as a Mexican when in fact they're a Latina. There is an Iranian character who's assumed to be an Iraqi.
So how much of this is about race?
Well, an awful lot of it is about race, but I would say more importantly, it's also about religion and spirituality. One of the things that a lot of critics have completely overlooked is that the movie is set at Christmas. There is an awful lot of religious imagery in it. There is a very important plot devices involving St. Christopher's. There is a lot of talk about angels, and there is one miracle, what appears to be a Christmas miracle in the middle of the film. Now, I've now seen Crash twice, and I've read a lot of sniffy reviews about it. In America, people applauded it and said, oh, it's, you know, great, interesting film about race relations. Over here, the British critics have said, well, it's nothing like as deep as the Americans think it is. I think it is, but not because of the race relations stuff. I think it's a movie about redemption. I think it's a movie about that attempts to talk with a human heart about the human soul. I think it will stand the test of time. Second time round, I was even more impressed by it than I was the first time. I know that obviously in order to make these kind of shortcuts, Magnolia style things work, you have to take a lot of dramatic liberties and you have to make plot contrivances that clearly, you know, aren't naturalistic. But I thought it was a very fine piece of work. And second time round, I thought it was even better. And both times round, I cried and laughed because it's very funny.
So your pick of the week is
Crash.
Crash. And Anna in Stockholm has been on for you and says Scarlett Johansson will be from Swedish immigrants, so therefore should be pronounced Johansson
it's
and not
Johansson.
It's pronounced
Johansson. I don't care where she's from, that's how it's pronounced.
And very briefly, Mark Tennant, this is one for you for next week. Could you get Mark to sit in the other seat so that we can see his quiff, bummer, body language and all-around contemptual facial expressions while he's trashing the movies? So you must do that next week.